evening, Truthsakers. Mike Malloy here on the NoVam Radio Network. Hope you all had a good time on your time off. Well, I've been sitting here in this damn studio doing a program every single night. Where were you? Where were you? Anyway, I'm glad to be back, and I'll go through all that nonsense of, gee, it's good to be back, after we get through this madness that is occurring tonight in Tennessee. Is it in Tennessee, Kat? I don't even know. We're going to go right to the, quote, debate, end quote, and hear what the crazy man is saying. Stay with us all night. I'm Mike Malloy. Just stay right there, right there.
Taxes low. Let's not raise taxes on anybody today. We obviously have to stop the spending spree that's going on in Washington. Do you know that we've laid a $10 trillion debt on these young Americans who are here with us tonight? $500 billion of it we owe to China. We've got to have a package of reforms, and it's got to lead to reform, prosperity, and peace in the world. And I think that this problem has become so severe, as you know, that we're going to have to do something about home values. You know that home values of retirees continues to decline, and people are no longer able to afford their mortgage payments. As President of the United States, Alan, I would order the Secretary of the Treasury to immediately buy up the bad home loan mortgages in America and renegotiate at the new value of those homes, at the diminished value of those homes, and let people be able to make those payments and stay in their homes. Is it expensive? Yes. But we all know, my friends, until we stabilize home values in America, we're never going to start turning around and creating jobs and fixing our economy. And we've got to give some trust and confidence back to America. I know how to do that, my friends. And it's my proposal. It's not Senator Obama's proposal. It's not President Bush's proposal. But I know how to get America working again, restore our economy, and take care of working Americans. Thank you.
Senator, we have 1 minute for a discussion here. Obviously, the powers of the Treasury Secretary have been greatly expanded. The most powerful officer in the cabinet now. Hank Paulson says he won't stay on. Who do you have in mind to appoint to that very important post? Senator McCain?
Not you, Tom.
No, with good reason.
You know, that's a tough question, and there's a lot of qualified Americans, but I think the first criteria, Tom, would have to be somebody who immediately Americans identify with. Immediately say, we can trust that individual. Supporter of Senator Obama's is Warren Buffett. He's already weighed in and helped stabilize some of the difficulties in the markets and with companies and corporations, institutions today. I like Meg Whitman. She knows what it's like to be out there in the marketplace. She knows how to create jobs. Meg Whitman was CEO of a company that started with 12 people and is now 1.3 million people in America make their living off eBay. Maybe somebody here has done a little business with him. But the point is, it's going to have to be somebody who inspires trust and confidence. Because the problem in America today, to a large extent, Tom, is that we don't have trust and confidence in our institutions because of the corruption on Wall Street and the greed and excess and the cronyism in Washington, yep. D.C.
All right. Senator McCain, Senator Obama, who do you have in mind for Treasury Secretary?
Well, Warren would be a pretty good choice, Warren Buffett, and I'm pleased to have his support, but there are other folks out there. The key is making sure that the next Treasury Secretary understands that it's not enough just to help those at the top. Prosperity is not just going to trickle down. We've got to help the middle class. And we've, you know, Senator McCain and I have some fundamental disagreements on the economy, starting with Senator McCain's statement earlier that he thought the fundamentals of the economy were sound. Part of the problem here is that for many of you, wages and incomes have flatlined. For many of you, it is getting harder and harder to save, harder and harder to retire. And that's why, for example, on tax policy, what I want to do is provide a middle-class tax cut to 95% of working Americans, those who are working two jobs, people who are not spending enough time with their kids because they are struggling to make ends meet. Senator McCain is right that we've got to stabilize housing prices, But underlying that is loss of jobs and loss of income. That's something that the next Treasury Secretary is going to have to work on.
Senator Obama, thank you very much. May I remind both of you, if I can, that we're operating under rules that you signed off on. And when we have a discussion, it really is to be confined within about a minute or so. We're going to go now, Senator McCain, to the next question for you from the hall here. And it comes from Oliver Clark, who is over here in Section F. Oliver?
Well, Senators, through this economic crisis, most of the people that I know have had a difficult time. And through this bailout package, I was wondering what it is that's going to actually help those people out.
Well, thank you, Oliver. And that's an excellent question because, as you just described it, bailout, when I believe that it's rescue. Because of the greed and excess in Washington and Wall Street, Main Street was paying a very heavy price. And we know that. I left my campaign and suspended it to go back to Washington.
Hey, when's he going to wink? Sure that there were, or say you betcha? Come on, John.
Form of good
wink! God damn it!
Form of taxpayers being the
first. Come on, the high heels on, the gloves are off, or something like that. How about the garter belt? Oh, never mind. Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
But, you know, one of the real catalyst, really the match that lit this fire, was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'll bet you may never even have heard of them before this crisis. But you know,
what?
They're the ones that, with the encouragement of Senator Obama and his cronies and his friends.
No, wait a minute. Is Uncle John talking down to the black guy? I bet you've never heard of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. I bet you think that's one of your cousins, don't you?
We've got to enact legislation to fix this. We've got to stop this greed and excess. Meanwhile, the Democrats in the Senate and some members of Congress defended what Fannie and Freddie
Sit
were doing. They resisted any
Yo
change.
Fart.
Meanwhile, they were getting all kinds of money and campaign contributions.
Yeah, like who?
Senator Obama was the second highest recipient of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac money in history.
Woo!
So this rescue package means that we will stabilize markets, we will shore up these institutions, but it's not enough. That's why we're going to have to go out into the housing market.
Show us your garter belt.
Buy up these bad loans, and we're going to have to stabilize home values. And that way Americans can, like Alan, can realize the American dream and stay in their home. But Fannie and Freddie were the catalyst, the match that started this forest fire.
Okay, yeah.
There were some of us.
Oh, sit
there were some of
down.
Us who stood up against it. There was others who took a hike.
Uh-huh. General Obama.
Well, Oliver, first let me tell you what's in the rescue package for you. Right now, the credit markets are frozen up. And what that means as a practical matter is that small businesses and some large businesses just can't get loans. If they can't get a loan, that means that they can't make payroll. If they can't make payroll, then they may end up having to shut their doors and lay people off. And if you imagine just one company trying to deal with that, now imagine a million companies all across the country. So it could end up having an adverse effect on everybody. And that's why we had to take action, but we shouldn't have been there in the first place. Now, I've got to correct a little bit of Senator McCain's history, not surprisingly. Let's first of all understand that the biggest problem in this whole process was the deregulation of the financial system. Senator McCain, as recently as March, bragged about the fact that he is a deregulator. On the other hand, 2 years ago, I said that we've got a subprime lending crisis that has to be dealt with. I wrote to Secretary Paulson. I wrote to Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke and told them this is something we have to deal with, and nobody did anything about it. A year ago, I went to Wall Street and said we've got to re-regulate, and nothing happened. And Senator McCain, during that period, said that we should keep on deregulating because that's how the free enterprise system works. Now, with respect to Fannie Mae, what Senator McCain didn't mention is the fact that this bill that he talked about wasn't his own bill. He jumped on it a year after it had been introduced, and it never got passed. And I never promoted Fannie Mae. In fact, Senator McCain's campaign chairman's firm was a lobbyist on behalf of Fannie Mae, not me. So, but look, you're not interested in hearing politicians point fingers. What you're interested in is trying to figure out how is this going to impact you.
Oh, this is riveting. Oh, my God. All right.
I just wish Brock would pull out a baseball bat and walk over to the old man and just smack him upside his head. Let's just get it over with. Go, whap! We'll be back after the... Oh, listen to the liberal. He's advocating violence. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVM.
Distance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Hey, it's 21 past the hour. Let's go back to the debate between Barack Obama and I don't know who this old man is.
I have advocated and taken on the special interest, whether they be the big money people by reaching across the aisle and working with Senator Feingold on campaign finance reform, whether it being a variety of other issues, working with Senator Lieberman on trying to address climate change. I have a clear record of bipartisanship. The situation today cries out for bipartisanship. Senator Obama has never taken on his the leaders of his party on a single issue. And we need to reform. And so let's look at our records as well as our rhetoric. That's really part of your mistrust here.
Let's do that.
And now I suggest that maybe you go to some of these organizations that are the watchdogs of what we do, like the Citizens Against Government Waste or the National Taxpayers Union or these other organizations that watch us all the time. I don't expect you to watch every vote. And you know what you'll find? This is the most liberal big spending record in the United States Senate. I have fought against excessive spending and outrageous. I have fought to reduce the earmarks and eliminate them. Do you know that Senator Obama is proposing $860 billion of new spending now? New spending. Do you know that he voted for every increase in spending that I saw come across the floor of the United States Senate while we were working to eliminate these pork barrel earmarks? He voted for nearly $1 billion in pork barrel earmark projects, including, by the way, $3 million for an overhead projector at a planetarium in Chicago, Illinois. My friends, do we need to spend that kind of money? I think you have to look at my record and you have to look at his. Then you have to look at our proposals for our economy. Not $860 billion in new spending, but for the kinds of reforms that keep people in their jobs, get middle-income Americans working again, and getting our economy moving again. You're going to be examining our proposals tonight and in the future. And energy independence is a way to do that, is one of them. And drilling offshore and nuclear power are two vital elements of that. And I've been supporting those, and I know how to fix this economy and eliminate our dependence on foreign oil and stop sending $700 billion a year overseas.
Well, we've run out of time. We have this one-minute discussion period going on here. There are new economic realities out there that everyone in this hall and across this country understands that there are going to have to be some choices made. Health policies, energy policies, and entitlement reform. What are going to be your priorities in what order? Which of those will be your highest priority your first year in office and which will follow in sequence? Senator McCain.
The three priorities were health.
The three, health care, energy, and entitlement reform, Social Security and Medicare. In what order would you put them in terms of priorities?
I think you can work on all three at once, Tom. I think it's very important that we reform our entitlement programs. My friends, we are not going to be able to provide the same benefit for present-day workers that present-day retirees have today. We're going to have to sit down across the table, Republican and Democrat, as he did in 1983 between Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill. I know how to do that. I have a clear record of reaching across the aisle, whether it be Joe Lieberman.
Hey, why don't you say you have a record of reaching across the aisle again?
That's
what is that?
Clear.
Is that the fourth time he said it?
We can can work on nuclear
power.
I reached across the aisle to Joe Lieberman.
All of the above.
Alternative fuels, wind, tide, solar, natural gas, clean coal technology, all of these things we can do as Americans, and we can take on this mission, and we can overcome it. My friend, some of this $700 billion ends up in the hands of terrorist organizations. As far as health care is concerned, obviously everyone is struggling to make sure that they can afford their premiums and that they can have affordable and available health care. That's the next issue. But we can do them all at once. And we have to do them all at once. All three you mentioned are compelling national security requirements.
I'm trying to play by the rules that you all established. 1 minute for discussion. Senator Obama, if you would give us your list of priorities. There are some real questions about whether everything can be done at once.
We're going to have to prioritize. Just like a family has to prioritize. Now, I've listed the things that I think have to be at the top of the list. Energy, we have to deal with today because you're paying $3.80 here in Nashville for gasoline, and it could go up. And it's a strain on your family budget, but it's also bad for our national security because countries like Russia and Venezuela and, you know, in some cases, countries like Iran are benefiting from higher oil prices. So we've got to deal with that right away.
What about Saudi Arabia?
$15 billion a year,
Brock,
over 10 years. Our goal should be...
Watch the clock, Brock, or Tom Brokaw's going to get his depends in a wad again.
Well, I'm just trying to play by the rules you people establish.
Oh, shut up.
How to do it, but we understood that if the American people make a decision to do something, it gets done. So that would be...
Oh, is it time for another break? All right, listen, stick around if you want to. If you don't, that's cool, too. But we'll be back after this break and listen to more of the, town hall-style debate between the two candidates to be president of the United States of America. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Come to stay.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, well, I could do that. I could sing you a soothing bedtime lullaby, but there's all kinds of action on the presidential debate front. So let's go back to Barack Obama and the other guy and listen to this, the second presidential debate.
And so part of the problem, I think, for a lot of people who are listening here tonight is they don't feel as if they are sharing the burden with other folks. I mean, you know, it's tough to ask a teacher who's making $30,000 or $35,000 a year to tighten her belt when people who are making much more than her are living pretty high on the hog. And that's why I think it's important for the president to set a tone that says all of us are going to contribute, all of us are going to make sacrifices, and it means that, yes, we may have to cut some spending, although I disagree with Senator McCain about an across-the-board freeze. That's an example of an unfair burden sharing. That's using a hatchet to cut the federal budget. I want to use a scalpel so that people who need help are getting help, and those of us like myself and Senator McCain who don't need help aren't getting it. That's how we make sure that everybody is willing to make a few sacrifices.
Senator McCain.
Well, you know, nailing down Senator Obama's various tax proposals is like nailing Jell-O to the wall. There's been five or six of them, and if you wait long enough, there'll probably be another one. But he wants to raise taxes. My friends, the last president to raise taxes during tough economic times was Herbert Hoover, and he practiced protectionism as well, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point. You know, last year, up to this time, we've lost 700,000 jobs in America. The only bright spot is that over 300,000 jobs have been created by small businesses. Senator Obama's secret that you don't know is that his tax increases will increase taxes on 50% of small business revenue. Small businesses across America will have to cut jobs and will have their taxes increase and won't be able to hire because of Senator Obama's tax policies. You know, he said some time ago, he said he would forgo his tax increases if the economy was bad. I got some news, Senator Obama. The news is bad. So let's not raise anybody's taxes, my friends, and make it be very clear to you, I am not in favor of tax cuts for the wealthy. I am in favor of leaving the tax rates alone and reducing the tax burden on middle-income Americans by doubling your tax exemption for every child from $3,500 to $7,000, to giving every American a $5,000 refundable tax credit and go out and get the health insurance you want, rather than mandates and fines for small businesses, as Senator Obama's plan calls for. And let's create jobs and let's get our economy going again, and let's not raise anybody's taxes.
Senator Obama, we have another question from the Internet.
Can I respond to this briefly?
The rules were established by the two campaigns. We worked very hard on this.
Right.
This will address, I think, the next question.
The tax issue, because I think it's very important. Go ahead.
There are lots of issues that we're going to be dealing with here tonight. Right. We have a question from Langdon in Ballston Spa, New York, and that's about huge unfunded obligations for Social Security, Medicare, and other entitlement programs that will soon eat up all the revenue that's in place and then go into a deficit position. Since the rules are pretty loose here, I'm going to add my own to this one. Instead of having a discussion, let me just ask you as a coda to that. Would you give Congress a date certain to reform Social Security and Medicare within 2 years after you take office? Because in a bipartisan way, everyone agrees that's a big ticking time bomb that will eat us up maybe even more than the mortgage crisis.
Well, Tom, we're going to have to take on entitlements. And I think we've got to do it quickly. We're going to have a lot of work to do, so I can't guarantee that we're going to do it in the next 2 years. But I'd like to do it in my first term as president. But I think it's important to understand we're not going to solve Social Security and Medicare unless we understand the rest of our tax policies. And, you know, Senator McCain, I think, you know, the straight talk express lost a wheel on that one. So let's be clear about my tax plan and Senator McCain's, because we're not going to be able to deal with entitlements unless we understand the revenues coming in. I want to provide a tax cut for 95% of Americans. 95%. If you make less than $250,000 a year, you will not see a single dime of your taxes go up. If you make $200,000 a year or less, your taxes will go down. Now, Senator McCain talks about small businesses. Only a few percent of small businesses make more than $250,000 a year. So the vast majority of small businesses would get a tax cut under my plan. And we provide a 50% tax credit so that they can buy health insurance for their workers, because there are an awful lot of small businesses that I meet all across America that want to do right by their workers, but they just can't afford it. Some small business owners, a lot of them, can't even afford health insurance for themselves. Now, in contrast, Senator McCain wants to give a $300 billion tax cut, to 200 of it to the largest corporations, and $100 billion of it going to people like CEOs on Wall Street. He wants to give the average Fortune 500 CEO an additional $700,000 in tax cuts. That is not fair, and it doesn't work. Now, if we get our tax policies right so that they're good for the middle class, if we reverse the policies of the last 8 years that got us into this fix in the first place and that Senator McCain supported, then we are going to be in a position to deal with Social Security and deal with Medicare, because we will have a health care plan that actually works for you, reduces spending and costs over the long term, and Social Security that is stable and solvent for all Americans and not just some.
Senator McCain, 2 years for reform of entitlement programs?
I'll answer the question. Look, It's not that hard to fix Social Security, Tom. It's just tough decisions. I want to get to Medicare in a second. Social Security is not that tough. We know what the problems are, my friends, and we know what the fixes are. We got to sit down together across the table. It's been done before. I saw it done with our wonderful Ronald Reagan, the conservative from California, and the liberal Democrat, Tip O'Neill from Massachusetts. That's what we need more of, and that's what I've done in Washington. Senator Obama has never taken on his party leaders on a single major issue. I've taken them on. I'm not too popular sometimes with my own party, much less his. So Medicare is going to be a little tougher. It's going to be a little tougher because we're talking about very complex and difficult issues. My friends, what we have to do with Medicare is have a commission, have the smartest people in America come together, come up with recommendations, and then, like the base closing commission idea we had, then we should have Congress vote up or down. Let's not let them fool with it anymore. There's too much special interest and too many lobbyists working there. So let's have the American people say, fix it for us. Now, just back on this tax, you know, again, it's back to our first question here about rhetoric and record. Senator Obama has voted 94 times to either increase your taxes or against tax cuts. That's his record.
Yeah, but you've reached across the aisle, right? You and Lieberman, you reach across the aisle all the time. What is it with you two? Old farts.
You know, he came to the Senate.
I mean, what do you do when you reach across the aisle? Here, let me pat you a little bit, Joe. Oh, John.
I've fought higher taxes. I have fought excess spending. I have fought to reform government. Let's look at our records, my friends, and then listen to my vision for the future of America. And we'll get our economy going again, and our best days are ahead of us.
Senator McCain, thank you very much. I'm going to stick by my part of the pack and not ask a follow-up here. The next question does come from the hall for Senator McCain. It comes from Section C over here, and it's from Ingrid Jackson. Ingrid?
Senator McCain, I want to know, we saw that Congress moved pretty fast in the face of an economic crisis. I want to know what you would do within the first 2 years to make sure that Congress moves fast as far as environmental issues like climate change and green jobs.
Well, thank you. Look, we are in tough economic times. We all know that. And let's never forget the struggle that Americans are in today. But when we have an issue that we may hand our children and our grandchildren a damaged planet. I have disagreed strongly with the Bush administration on this issue. I traveled all over the world looking at the effects of greenhouse gas emissions. Joe Lieberman and I introduced the first legislation, and we forced votes on it. That's the good news, my friends. Bad news is we lost. But we kept the debate going, and we kept this issue to posing to Americans the danger that climate change poses. Now, what's the best way of fixing it? Nuclear power. Senator Obama says that it has to be safe or disposable or something like that. Look, I was on Navy ships that had nuclear power plants. Nuclear power is safe and it's clean, and it creates hundreds of thousands of jobs.
You were on Navy ships
and,
that you tried to sink, you old fart.
We can reprocess the spent nuclear fuel. The Japanese, the British, and the French do it, and we can do it too. Senator Obama has opposed that. We can move forward and clean up our climate and develop green technologies and alternative energies for hybrid, for hydrogen, for battery-powered cars so that we can clean up our environment and at the same time get our economy going by creating millions of jobs. We can do that. We as Americans.
Well, see, the thing about McCain is he just keeps identifying problems, and he keeps talking about, well, we can do this, you know, we can build sidewalks, and we can cut down trees, and we can plant trees. And after we build the sidewalks, we can tear them up, and we can put more money in Medicare. And, you know, I was on a sidewalk one time, and we can do all that stuff, and you know, it's just amazing. We can do over here.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're listening to the presidential debate here, so let's get right back to it.
Should be treated as a commodity.
Well, you know, as I travel around the country, this is one of the single most frequently asked issues that I get, is the issue of health care. It is breaking family budgets. I can't tell you how many people I meet who don't have health insurance. If you've got health insurance, most of you have seen your premiums double over the last 8 years, and your co-payments and deductibles have gone up 30% just in the last year alone. If you're a small business, it's a crushing burden. So one of the things that I have said from the start of this campaign is that we have a moral commitment as well as an economic imperative to do something about the health care crisis that so many families are facing. So here's what I would do. If you've got health care already, and probably the majority of you do, then you can keep your plan. If you are satisfied with it, you can keep your choice of doctor. We're going to work with your employer to lower the cost of your premiums by up to $2,500 a year. And we're going to do it by investing in prevention. We're going to do it by making sure that we use information technology so that medical records are actually on computers. Instead of you filling forms out in triplicate when you go to the hospital, that'll reduce medical errors and reduce costs. If you don't have health insurance, you're going to be able to buy the same kind of insurance that Senator McCain and I enjoy as federal employees, because there's a huge pool. We can drop the costs, and nobody will be excluded for pre-existing conditions, which is a huge problem. Now, Senator McCain has a different kind of approach. He says that he's going to give you a $5,000 tax credit. What he doesn't tell you is that he is going to tax your employer-based health care benefits for the first time ever. So what one hand giveth, the other hand taketh away. He would also strip away the ability of states to provide some of the regulations on insurance companies to make sure that you're not excluded for pre-existing conditions, or your mammograms are covered, or your maternity is covered. And that is fundamentally the wrong way to go. In fact, just today, business organizations like the United States Chamber of Commerce, which generally are pretty supportive of Republicans, said that this would lead to the unraveling of the employer-based health care system. That, I don't think, is the kind of change that we need. We've got to have somebody who's fighting for patients and making sure that you get decent, affordable health care, and that's something that I'm committed to doing as president.
Senator McCain?
Well, thank you for the question. You really identify one of the really major challenges that America faces. Co-payments go up, costs go up, skyrocketing costs, which make people less and less able to afford health insurance in America. And we need to do all of the things that are necessary to make it more efficient. Let's put health records online. That'll reduce medical errors, as they call them. Let's have community health centers. Let's have walk-in clinics. Let's do a lot of things to impose efficiencies. But what is at stake here in this health care issue is the fundamental difference between myself and Senator Obama. As you notice, he starts talking about government. He starts like government will do this and government will do that. And then government will, and he'll impose mandates. If you're a small business person and you don't insure your employees, Senator Obama will fine you. Will fine you. That's remarkable. If you're a parent and you're struggling to get health insurance for your children, Senator Obama will fine you. I want to give every American a $5,000 refundable tax credit. They can take anywhere across state lines. Why not? Don't we go across state lines when we purchase other things in America? Of course it's okay to go across state lines, because in Arizona, they may offer a better plan that suits you best than it does here in Tennessee. And if you do the math, those people who have employer-based health benefits, if you put the tax on it and you have what's left over and you add $5,000 that you're going to get as a refundable tax credit, do the math. 95% of the American people will have increased funds to go out and buy the insurance of their choice and to shop around and to get. All those people will be covered except for those who have these gold-plated Cadillac kinds of policies, you know, like hair transplants. cents. I might need one of those myself. But the point is that we have got to give people choice in America and not mandate things on them and give them the ability. Every parent I know would acquire health insurance for their children if they could. Obviously, small business people want to give their employees health insurance. Of course, they all want to do that. We've got to give them the wherewithal to do it. We can do it by giving them, as a start, a $5,000 refundable tax credit to go around and get the health insurance policy of their choice.
Quick discussion. Is health care in America a privilege, a right, or a responsibility? Senator McCain?
I think it's a responsibility in this respect. In that we should have available and affordable health care to every American citizen, to every family member. And with the plan that I have, that will do that. But government mandates, I'm always a little nervous about. But it is certainly my responsibility. It is certainly small business people and others. And they understand that responsibility. American citizens understand that. Employers understand that. But they certainly are a little nervous when Senator Obama says, if you don't get the health care policy that I think you should have, that you're going to get fined. And by the way, Senator Obama has never mentioned how much that fine might be. Perhaps we might find that out tonight.
Well, let's talk about this, Tom, because there was just a lot of stuff out there.
Privilege, right, and responsibility.
Well,
start with that.
I think it should be a right for every American. In a country as wealthy as ours, for us to have people who are going bankrupt because they can't pay their medical bills. For my mother to die of cancer at the age of 53 and have to spend the last months of her life in a hospital room arguing with insurance companies because they're saying that this may be a pre-existing condition and they don't have to pay her treatment, there's something fundamentally wrong about that. So let me just talk about this fundamental difference. And Tom, I know that we're under time constraints, but Senator McCain threw a lot of stuff out there. Number one, let me just repeat. If you got a health care plan that you like, you can keep it. All I'm going to do is help you to lower the premiums on it. You'll still have choice of doctor. There's no mandate involved. Small businesses.
All right, truth seekers. We'll get to the Malloy part of the program when the debate is over. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. We are covering listening to, we don't cover anything on this program. We are listening to the debate, carrying the feed from one of the networks. I'm not even sure which one it is, but whoever it is, thanks a lot, guys. We appreciate it. When this is finished, which I believe it will be in about 23 minutes, then we will open up the phone lines and take your calls about what you heard tonight. As far as the weird events of the past 8 or 9 days, I guess we'll get to that stuff later on in the week, maybe tomorrow. But since it is debate night in the United States, as CNN was so quick to remind us, it's debate night in the U.S., then let's just participate. You don't want to be left out, do you? I certainly don't. So let's go back to this, all right?
Brave young Marines were killed. So you have to temper your decisions with the ability to beneficially affect the situation and realize you're sending America's most precious asset, American blood, into harm's way. And again, I know those situations. I've been in them all my life.
And I've reached and across the aisle right now, and I've challenged my own leadership. I've got a plan.
Are my first priority right after our nation's security.
And I used to blow up civilians. You know, I'm having a great week here, having my little attack puppet call Obama a terrorist, because, you know, he hangs out with former weatherman Bill Ayers. But, you know, I used to blow people up, too. Oh, God, as many as I could. I had, like, I don't know what, 23 bombing sorties over Vietnam. I killed lots of people.
From the F section, and it's from Katie Hamm. Katie?
Should the United States respect Pakistani sovereignty and not pursue al-Qaeda terrorists who maintain bases there? Or should we ignore their borders and pursue our enemies like we did in Cambodia during the Vietnam War?
You're not supposed to know
Katie,
about
it's
Cambodia.
A terrific question. And we have a difficult situation in Pakistan. I believe that part of the reason we have a difficult situation is because we made a bad judgment going into Iraq in the first place when we hadn't finished the job of hunting down bin Laden and crushing al-Qaeda. So what happened was we got distracted, we diverted resources, and ultimately bin Laden escaped, set up base camps in the mountains of Pakistan in the northwest provinces there. They are now raiding our troops in Afghanistan, destabilizing the situation. They're stronger now than any time since 2001. And that's why I think it's so important for us to reverse course, because that's the central front on terrorism. They are plotting to kill Americans right now. As the Secretary Gates, the Defense Secretary, said, the war against terrorism began in that region, and that's where it will end. So part of the reason I think it's so important for us to end the war in Iraq is to be able to get more troops into Afghanistan, put more pressure on the Afghan government to do what it needs to do, eliminate some of the drug trafficking that's funding terrorism. But I do believe that we have to change our policies with Pakistan. We can't coddle, as we did, a dictator, give him billions of dollars, and then he's making peace treaties with the Taliban and militants. What I've said is we're going to encourage democracy in Pakistan, expand our non-military aid to Pakistan so that they have more of a stake in working with us, but insisting that they go after these militants. And if we have Osama bin Laden in our sights and the Pakistani government is unable or unwilling to take them out, then I think that we have to act, and we will take them out. We will kill bin Laden. We will crush al-Qaeda. That has to be our biggest national security priority.
Senator McCain.
Katie, thank you. You know, my hero is a guy named Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt used to say, walk softly, talk softly, but carry a big stick. Senator Obama likes to talk loudly. In fact, he said he wants to announce that he's going to attack Pakistan.
And I'd be sneaky!
You know, if you are a country and you're trying to gain the support of another country,
I'm not a country.
Then you want to do everything you
can
that they would act in a cooperative fashion. When you announce that you're going to launch an attack into another country,
yeah,
it's pretty obvious that you have the effect that it had in Pakistan. It turns public opinion against us.
Be sneaky.
Now, let me just go back with you very briefly. We drove the Russians out with the Afghan freedom fighters, drove the Russians out of Afghanistan, and then we made his most serious
mistake. Yeah, his name was bin Laden.
We washed our hands of Afghanistan. The Taliban came back in,
Taliban.
Al-Qaeda, and we then had the situation that required
the Taliban,
to conduct the Afghan war. Now, our relations with Pakistan are critical because the border areas are being used as safe havens by the Taliban and al-Qaeda and other extremist organizations.
Oh, yeah?
And we have to get their support. Now, General Petraeus had a strategy. The same strategy, very different because of the conditions
the same,
and
but
the
very
situation.
Different. Yeah,
but the same fundamental strategy that succeeded in Iraq. And that is to get the support of the people. We need to help the Pakistani government go into Waziristan, where I visited, a very rough country. And
I reached across the aisle there, too.
And get them to work with us and turn against the cruel Taliban and others.
Taliban.
And by working and coordinating our efforts, efforts together, not threatening to attack them, but working with them, and where necessary, use force.
Kathy, I don't know how much more of this I can handle.
Tom,
wait a minute. He just picked up a stick.
If we're going to have follow-ups, then I will want follow-ups.
No, I know that.
Be fine with me. Hit him!
If I can have one.
Smack him!
Just a quick follow-up.
Slap the hell out of him. Go ahead.
I'm just a hired help here, so I mean...
Grab him by his depends.
Look, I want to be very clear about what I said. Nobody called for the invasion of Pakistan. Senator McCain continues to repeat this. What I said was the same thing that the audience here today heard me say, which is if Pakistan is unable or unwilling to hunt down bin Laden and take him out
then where?
We should. Now, that, I think, has to be our policy because they are threatening to kill more Americans.
Yeah.
Now, Senator McCain suggests that somehow... You know, I'm green behind the ears, and, you know, I'm just spouting
No, wet behind the ears.
Somber and responsible.
Thank you very much.
Senator McCain, this is the guy who sang Bomb, Bomb, Bomb Iran, who called for the annihilation of North Korea. That, I don't think, is an example of speaking softly. This is the person who, after we hadn't even finished Afghanistan, where he said, next up, Baghdad. So I agree that we have to speak responsibly, and we have to act responsibly. And the reason Pakistan, the popular opinion of America had diminished in Pakistan, was because we were supporting a dictator. Musharraf had given him $10 billion over 7 years, and he had suspended civil liberties. We were not promoting democracy. This is the kind of policies that ultimately end up undermining our ability to fight the war on terrorism, and it will change when I'm president.
Tom, if we're going to go back and forth, then I'd like to have equal time to go to respond.
Yeah, you get to last the, word here, and then we have to move on.
Not true. Not true.
Not
I
true.
Have obviously supported those efforts that the United States had to do militarily, and I oppose
And you reached across the aisle and gave old Lieberman a reach around, didn't you? Oh, Jesus! I don't know. Can we keep doing this? I don't know. When's the next break? We have a break coming up here pretty quick. All right. This is supposed to end in about 15 minutes, huh? This is the part that irritates me about Obama. Why isn't Obama walking over there to the thing McCain is sitting on and just grab him by his red necktie and shake him till his underwear falls off? I mean, you know, just cut the crap. Just walk over to him. I mean, who's going to arrest him, right? It's politics. Just go grab him, Barack. This guy's driving me insane. But anyway, we'll try to stick it out for another 15 minutes. And Brokaw, you know, Brokaw should have stayed retired. You know, or take his liver pills, or go do his blood sugar or something. Somebody give the son of a bitch a candy bar. Anything. Brokaw's just sitting there like, now I told you. All right, well, I'll do my part. We'll be right back.
Fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
So it's 21 past the hour. What the hell are they talking about Pakistan for? The Telegraph, the UK, is reporting that Pakistan is on the brink of bankruptcy, as is Iceland. Jesus God! 9 months ago, Pakistan had $16 billion in their national bank or whatever the hell it's called, but now it's all gone. They're down. Well, they've still got $3 billion left, enough to buy food and oil for about 30 days. You know, Pakistan is about to implode. Both of these clowns, I'm sorry, if you're a Barack Obama supporter, okay, email your candidate and tell him to stop talking about more war, for Christ's sake. But both of these clowns are talking about what they're going to do to Pakistan. They're not going to have to do anything to Pakistan. Pakistan is about to become another failed state. They're going to be a bunch of them. Pakistan, Iceland, God knows how many countries on the African continent, a couple in South America, some come soon. In the Middle East, the Far East, not Dubai. Dubai is doing just fine, thank you very much. But here they are talking about more war, this time in Pakistan. And what did McCain say? I've been to Waziristan. Oh, you old fart. You've been nowhere. You know what the hell you're talking about. Let's go back and hear some more of this. Oh, Georgia. Please, God,
that
give me strength.
Not a stable situation. So part of the job of the next commander-in-chief in keeping all of you safe is making sure that we can see some of the 21st century challenges and anticipate them before they happen. We haven't been doing enough of that. We tend to be reactive. That's what we've been doing over the last 8 years. And that has actually made us more safe. That's part of what happened in Afghanistan, where we rushed into Iraq. And Senator McCain and President Bush suggested that it wasn't that important to catch bin Laden right now and that we could muddle through. And that has cost us dearly. We've got to be much more strategic if we're going to be able to deal with all the challenges that we face out there. And one last point I want to make about Russia, energy is going to be key in dealing with Russia. If we can reduce our energy consumption, that reduces the amount of petrodollars that they have to make mischief around the world. That will strengthen us and weaken them when it comes to issues like Georgia.
This requires only a yes or a no. Ronald Reagan famously said that the Soviet Union was the evil empire. Do you think that Russia, under Vladimir Putin, is an evil empire?
I think they've engaged in evil behavior, and I think that it is important that we understand they're not the old Soviet Union, but they still have nationalist the impulses that I think are very dangerous.
Senator McCain?
Maybe. Depends on how we respond to, Russia, and depends
he
on
said depends.
A lot of things. If I say yes, then that means that we're reigniting the old Cold War. If I say no, it ignores their behavior. Obviously, energy is going to be a big, big factor. And Georgia and Ukraine are both major gateways of energy into Europe. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, and you've been there, haven't you? You and Lieberman. You were just there, weren't you?
Russians,
weren't you there? Yeah, you reached across the aisle, grabbed Lieberman by his belt buckle, and off you two went. You went to
United States of America that will defend our interests and that of other countries in the world.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to try to get in two more questions if we can, so we have to move along. Over in Section A, Terry Shirey. You have that right, Terry?
Senator. As a retired Navy chief, my thoughts are often those who serve our country. I know both candidates, both of you, expressed support for Israel. If despite your best diplomatic efforts, Iran attacks Israel, would you be willing to commit U.S. troops in support and defense of Israel, or would you wait on approval from the U.N. Security Council?
Well, thank you, Terry, and thank you for your service to the country. I want to say everything I ever learned about leadership I learned from a chief petty officer, and I thank you. And I thank you, my friend. Thanks for serving.
Say thank you again. Say it again.
Let me say that we obviously would not wait for the United Nations Security Council.
Oh,
I think
no.
The realities are that both Russia and China would probably pose significant obstacles. And our challenge right now is the Iranians continue on the path to acquiring nuclear weapons.
And you've been there,
and
haven't
it's a great
you?
Threat. It's not just a threat to the state of Israel. It's a threat to the stability of the entire Middle East.
Really?
If Iran acquires nuclear weapons, all the other countries will acquire them too. The tensions will be ratcheted up. What would you do if you were the Israelis and the president of a country says that they are determined to wipe you off the map, calls your country a stinking corpse?
Yeah.
Now, Senator Obama, without precondition, wants to sit down and negotiate with them.
Without preconditions.
That's what he stated. Again, a matter of record. I want to make sure that the Iranians are put enough, that we put enough pressure on the Iranians,
and you've
by
been
joining
there
with our allies, yeah, imposing.
Okay, okay, all right, Kathy, take it out, take it out. Oh my God. What if Iran decides to nuke India? Will you wait for a UN resolution, boys, or will you just come to India's defense? What do you think? Oh my God, this is. I'm waiting for Brokaw to say, Senator McCain, if somebody broke out of prison and raped and murdered your wife, would you be in favor of the death penalty?
How much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, this is NoVam Radio. They're almost finished. This last question was a real doozy. Bring up the sound level. Is it all over?
I want to thank our host here at Belmont University.
Oh, quick, take him out. Oh, goodbye, everybody. Have a nice, you know, whatever. Yeah, Jesus. What was that last question? The only internet question they got. What don't you know, and how will you learn it? And old Brokaw was sitting there squinching around in his Depends, and he said, well, this is kind of a Zen question. Actually, it wasn't, but that's all right, Tom. You know, nice try. And I wanted to answer for both of these candidates. I wanted to answer for Obama. What don't you know? Well, you don't know, apparently, what kind of a hellstorm is facing you if you want to be president of these United States. And how will you learn it? Oh, you'll learn it, pal. Oh, are you going to learn it? As far as McCain is concerned, what don't you know and how will you learn it? Christ almighty, he's got to learn how to use a handheld computer. I mean, he's got to learn how to use email. How's he going to learn it? Cindy, reptile eyes will help him, right? Look at this, John. Push this button. And then did you hear McCain at the very end trying to cop that I was raised by a single mom thing? Because, you know, my dad was out murdering millions of people around the earth, and I was home with mom, practically being raised by my mother. Y'all want to talk about this? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-1480 if you want to. If you don't, I certainly understand. I don't know what it is about Barack Obama that he can give these great speeches when he's in front of a huge crowd. But when he gets in a setting like this, maybe it's just the osmotic force of John McCain just kind of bleeding out from Barack, his articulateness, not that McCain gets it. I mean, it just goes on the floor. And McCain or Barack just kind of stands there and says stuff like, oh, okay, but why don't you stop talking? And you know how it works in Chicago, Senator Obama. You know what it's like. You've been in Chicago. I'm sure you've driven through Bridgeport. I'm sure you've driven through Rogers Park. You know, I'm sure you've gone up to the Uptown neighborhood. Come on. You know what to do. Pick up a goddamn stick and walk over there and just start beating him. Just saying, boy, you tell any more stories on me, I am going to kick your ass into Lake Michigan. That's what you need to do, Barack. I mean, the man is a filthy liar, McCain. This hoe he has working for him as a vice presidential, whatever the hell she is. Did you know that Barack Obama hung out with Ayers? Listen, Palin. I've got some news for you. We may get to it tonight. We may not. But while you're worried about what Barack Obama was, what was going on in Barack Obama's neighborhood when he was eight years old, your boy McCain was working with an organization whose sole function was to destabilize governments, murder people, overthrow duly elected heads of state if we didn't agree. Come on, Palin, you jerk ass. Get your ass back up to Alaska and go fishing or something. But anyway. Anyway, what? I don't know. I listen to stuff. I usually go to these televised so-called debates with good intentions. You know, the cobblestones with which the road to hell is paved. But I usually go with good intentions. Okay, I want to see Barack Obama rip this guy a new body orifice. And Obama holds back. Why does I know why he holds back. It's a cultural thing. He's a black man, a young black man. And to most of white America, that's the biggest threat in the world. Oh, Jesus. And McCain is this old white man who, you know, nobody's supposed to pick on, even though McCain is a mass killer. You know, McCain has said, how can you countenance someone who is engaged in bombing that could have or did kill innocent people, referring to Bill Ayers, the former Weather Underground dude. But you know, why not ask McCain about the carnage he actually did when he went on all his bombing runs over North Korea, butchering children, old people, young people, men, women, probably gay folk, you know, some Christians. You know, Vietnam had Christians, still does. So there they are trying to draw this line between Barack Obama and Bill Ayers. Jesus H. Christ. And you know, there's some right wingers that are just lapping it up, just sucking it up. Oh, what have I got? Let me see here. Where is this thing? The truth about, yeah, here we go. Oh, no, that's not it. The cameras, domestic terrorism. Okay, this is from, I don't know, some blogger. I'm sorry, I didn't write down your name. It's your material. I'm just going to steal it wherever you are. I really don't care. McCain's campaign made clear that it would start employing a strategy of attacking Obama's character. Do you like that? This is right. That's the Karl Rove thing. In part, the way they're going to do this, they highlight Barack Obama's alleged association with a radical like Bill Ayers. And the McCain strategist, the top McCain strategist, told the New York Daily News the other day, it's a dangerous road, but we have no choice. If we keep talking about the economic crisis, we're going to lose. Hey, stupid man, you're going to lose anyway. But anyway, the association of Barack Obama and William Ayers, are you ready? As has been extensively documented, consists of, first, a 1995 meeting of Chicago political figures at which Obama appeared, which took place in Ayers' home. Okay? Number two, the fact that the two served together on the board of the Woods Fund, a charitable organization in Chicago. And three, the fact that the two attended six meetings of the board of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge, which is a program funded by the late Walter Annenberg, a longtime Republican donor, Richard Nixon's ambassador to Great Britain, used to be the publisher of TV Guide, I think. Obama chaired the group's board, and Ayers attended the meetings to brief the board on educational issues. And as the New York Times reported when? Last Sunday? Quote, the two men, Obama and Ayers, do not appear to have been close, nor has Mr. Obama ever expressed sympathy for the radical views and action of Mr. Ayers, whom he has called somebody who engaged in detestable acts 40 years ago when I was 8. Ayers has had no involvement in Obama's presidential campaign. Now, it goes without saying, but you have to pound this into the head of right-wingers. Obama was not in any way involved in Bill Ayers' actions in the 60s and 70s. Because he was between 8 and 11 years old, you dumbasses! Ah! An 8-year-old kid! What are you going to do after school today, Barry? Oh, I'm going to go over to Bill Ayers' house. We're going to build bombs. We're going to blow stuff up. Now, what about John McCain? His association, his relationship with convicted Watergate felon G. Gordon Liddy, who plotted to firebomb the Brookings Institute, and murder columnist Jack Anderson, who offered advice on how to shoot agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Remember that? And who McCain has praised for his alleged adherence to the principles and philosophies that keep our nation great. Jesus H. God! Now, that's not all. McCain was linked to the U.S. Council for World Freedom. You talk about Soviet-style newspeak, the U.S. Council for World Freedom. Part of an international organization linked to former Nazi collaborators and ultra-right-wing death squads in Central America. The group was dedicated to one thing, stamping out communism around the globe, no matter who died. If nuns, priests, children, peasants, industrialists, well diggers, electricians, if they all had to die, then goddammit, they were going to die. Now, the founder of this ragtag the bunch of terrorists was former Army Major General John Singlaub. Remember him? Some of you are old enough to remember him. I remember this psychopathic bastard. I remember him. And McCain became associated with this organization in the early 80s. That's when he was launching his political career in Arizona. Singlaub said McCain was a supporter of the U.S. Council for World Freedom. Now, Singlaub knew McCain's father, the Navy admiral, who had sought Singlaub's counsel when McCain, a Navy pilot, the younger one, became a prisoner of war and spent 5.5 years in North Vietnamese hands. Blah, 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 blah. Covert arms shipments to the CIA operatives called the Contras in Nicaragua, financed in part by secret arms sales to Iran that was run by Oliver North, became known as the Iran-Contra Affair. And that proved to be the undoing of Singlaub's little council of former Nazis. How do you say to dumbass Republicans or just dumbass Americans, how do you say to them, look, Bill Ayers was demonstrating in his way against the war in Vietnam, the slaughter of innocents, and threatened to do all kinds of bad things. Barack Obama at the time was 8 years old. John McCain, on the other hand, has committed mass murder of civilians in North Vietnam. He was associated with a terrorist organization, the U.S. Council or the World Council on Freedom, whatever the hell it was called. How do you explain that to Americans? How do you do that? Oh, well, the quick answer, Malloy, is you don't. We'll be right back.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. This is Novem Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. This comes from a listener in Argentina, Hernan. From Buenos Aires, he writes, Mike, why do we have to assume that McCain has valid military credentials? He ranked 894th out of 899 graduates of the Naval Academy. The other idiot, Palin, went through three or four schools before not graduating of anything. Well, I think she got a degree in journalism, Hernan. How could they run a country? I just don't get it. And how could it be that nearly half the United States is even thinking of voting for these, oops, can't say that on the air, for these blanks? What do Americans want for their country? Regards, Hernan. I don't know anymore. I really don't know. I can't imagine five people voting for McCain and Palin. McCain is obviously just I don't know. I don't know what he is. What is he? He's Jen writes in, Mike, I was at work until 9:30 and started listening to the debate as I was driving home, but I'm listening. And to me, it sounds like McCain is either on something or for the first time we are really hearing how unable McCain will be for the job. I mean, I heard of the idea that McCain is suffering from Alzheimer's, but hearing him talk tonight, I'm seriously beginning to wonder if this guy has it and wondering how far along it is. He sounds like he was taught to remember a handful of talking points, and he's basically trying to make the talking points fit all the questions. I know this is going to sound bad, Jen writes, but I almost feel sorry for the ass. He sounds like he is really drowning. Then I remember his viewpoints in the hockey mom nut job. He is placed one heartbeat away from the nuclear codes. And I want to bitch slap the Americans who want to vote for them and demand to know how crazy they are. The only way I can see McCain winning, quote, quote, this debate, quote, quote, is because people feel sorry for the old man. No offense to your more distinguished listeners or yourself. What the hell does that mean? Oh, God, Jen. I don't, she goes on, I don't know what else to say, but if McCain wins or steals the election, I don't know what I will do because I can't live in another more crazed Bush administration. Jen. A lot of emails here. Let's do some phone calls. The number here again is 800-989-1480. Paula! Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey. What did you think of this?
Oh, my God. Mike, that was painful. That was painful. I think I would rather, you know, like the Bush-Kerry debates were actually funny.
The what?
The Bush-Kerry debates 4 years ago were actually really funny because Bush was just, like, comical. He was almost, he was like, you know, it was like Tim Conway on the Carol Burnett show.
Right.
You know. But this was just like, it was painful. What was with McCain's wheezing?
I don't know.
And the breathlessness? Does he have asthma now on top of everything else?
I don't know what's going on with McCain. I just know he's a very sick man, physically sick. And, you know, somebody who is physically sick should not be putting himself in the kind of situation McCain seems to want to put himself in. We are not just the United States, but apparently the whole world right now is in a mess of trouble. Pakistan is facing bankruptcy. Iceland is facing bankruptcy. Those are the two we know about. All hell is breaking loose financially, globally. We really are in some trouble here, Paula. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But the last thing we need is some guy like McCain. I hope to live to be 72, but I damn sure don't want to be starting a presidency when I'm 72. A, B, his vice president is a nutcase who can't even tell an interviewer what newspaper she reads.
Oh my God, she can't string together three words.
No.
She makes Bush look like a Mensa candidate.
Oh my God.
Bush look like Mensa man.
I know.
And would NBC please sober up Tom Brokaw before they shove him in front of a camera?
Well, you know,
he sounds like he's like three sheets to the wind every time he's on TV.
I'll stick by the format. Now you guys decide on the format. You said it'd be a minute. How many times did he say that?
And it's just his demeanor tonight. I've had nuns that were more laid back than that. My God, what was he? He should have been wearing a habit and, you know, with rosary beads around his neck.
Yeah, and have a ruler in his hand.
That was just painful. And McCain scares me. And, you know, I was on the fence for a while there, but I am just, like, so behind Obama now.
Oh, my God, yes. McCain just...
Ever since Sarah Palin, I'm like, you know what? These they have to lose, and they have to lose big.
They've got to. With McCain eager to ignite World War III and Palin eager to rapture up to heaven, these two are a death sentence, not just for the United States,
but for
the whole world. They're an absolute death sentence. What when you look at McCain and Palin, what you're seeing is the frick and frack or the gruesome twosome of a death's head. I mean, these people are death. They're just pure death and destruction. But that's the same thing, I guess.
And I think I really have this. If they win, we will look back on the Bush-Cheney years as the good old days. And that's what frightens me.
Don't say that. Not even in jest.
No, that's what really frightens me because it's like she is everything that's bad about both of them together. If Bush and Cheney had a kid, it would be Sarah Palin.
It would be Sarah Palin. That's right.
And McCain is just like Ronald Reagan without the hair or the charm,
or the sense of humor, or the smile, or the wonderful movies. If you take away all that, you have John McCain. McCain tonight looked to me, he looked pale. He looked like a ghost. He looked like Bonko's ghost floating around on that damn stage. It was just, it was scary. And then Brokaw. I kept waiting for Brokaw, you know, the microphone to pick up one of these.
Maybe, do you know if Matlock is on DVD? Maybe we can tempt him to just give up this whole president thing. If we get him, like, the entire collection of Matlock, and he can go home and watch
it. He can go home and watch it. All right, I got to go, Paula. Thanks.
All righty, Mike. Thanks. Have a good night.
Keep your chin up. Talk to you later. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers. And we're just going to try to do all your phone calls. We have two open lines. So jump in here and join us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. This is Novem Radio. I think my microphone was open when I sneezed. Excuse me. Some, I guess, fall pollen here in foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We have so many things to talk about, but the debate was on tonight, so it might be good to talk about that. Okay. And then by tomorrow night, we can get back to a more standardized version of the Malloy program. So let's talk about the debate if you want to. We can spend some time at it here. Let's start with Dave, who's calling from Redwood City, California, listening on the internet. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. Welcome back to the working week. Speaker.
Thank you.
Hey, it's a little less brutal when I get a few of your comic relief interjections to try to listen to that debate. It was rough. And, I think the roughest thing about it for me was all the said and unthings said that these two guys unfortunately agree on. Obama had to reel himself back in from saying, I agree with Senator McCain, in the first debate too many times.
Right.
But really, they're both real big on this bailout. That's probably the biggest ripoff of our time. They both like this unending war thing America is stuck on.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty depressing to me.
Yes.
They're big on clean coal. Oh, that's going to help the global warming, right? Oh, what else? Remember the evil...
Nuclear energy, nuclear power.
We've got to build a bunch of nukes, right?
Yeah, we got to figure out what to do with all that nasty plutonium. The darn stuff just keeps radiating for, 2 or 3 billion years.
Yeah, maybe they can store it in their depends.
Could be.
I don't know. But, they both agree. Vladimir Putin, that evil guy, he invaded Georgia, right?
Uh-huh.
That's what the fawning corporate media misinformed the stupid American public to believe.
Well,
and these
right.
two guys are up there repeating that still?
Yeah, well, they're repeating it because they're apparently both of them, I don't know about McCain. McCain is just an old warmonger. But I think Barack is terrified to really shout out the truth when he knows he's staring at a lie. Plus, you have one of the biggest liars in television media sitting there conducting the interview, Tom Brokaw.
Absolutely. It's just horrible to see, the guy's handcuffed by whatever forces that handcuff him, where he has to walk this careful line and not appear to be the angry black man. I mean, that's down to about the only joy I'm going to see out of seeing a Democrat get elected this time around is that
right.
we'll elect a black man in this country. Hey, that's one thing we did, we can say later.
Yeah,
it's almost down to that for me. I mean, neither one of these guys can even answer that one simple question. Should health care be a commodity? That's a question that deserves a damn answer.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
it does. They got to go up there and talk about, oh, I got a way for you to pay for all these insurance premiums.
My little gimmick. I just wish Barack Obama would come out in favor of single payer health care. He won't, because then he'll lose the support of somebody. I don't know.
I guess, but it's too much to ask, because it would be so great if he could do something like that would just fill the vacuum where you want to be for this guy with everything,
right.
And there's just this vacuum of this. What is it? 9, 10, 12? How many things can we list that came up in the debate? And other things to where it's like, I agree with Senator McCain.
Right.
Well, that's
right.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah, it is.
Bruce Cheney justice isn't even close to the agenda at any time in anybody's lifetime, grandkids or anybody else, right?
I hear you. Dave, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate it, Dave. Thanks. And McCain's little riff about he's going to give a $5,000 is it tax credit or actual money? Do you remember, Kathy? I don't even know, because it's jive turkey nonsense. $5,000. That works out to what? $400 a month. Who out there listening right now, unless you're like, I don't know what, 20 and never been sick, who pays $400 a month for health insurance? $5,000 for, oh, Jesus, John, that's really a great deal. You know, most families, most families pay what? If they're on COBRA, oh my God, they're probably paying $10,000, $12,000, about a grand a month. I would imagine most families are paying about $500-700 a month. And McCain comes up with this half-assed $5,000 tax credit or whatever it is. I don't even know. Is it a direct payment? I don't know. So how long do you think it would take, with all that money floating around on a McCain health care plan, how long would it take for that $5,000 to just be swallowed by manufactured inflation, by the pharmaceutical industrial industry? How long do you think it would take? 6 months? 3 months? Huh? I don't know. It's just enough to make me sick, right? You too? Mary! Mary's calling from Memphis, listening on the internet. Hey, Mary.
Hey. There have been several things mentioned tonight. Just the overall reaction to the debate. I was sitting here screaming at the screen whenever he said my friends, because he's no friend of mine.
Yeah, really.
Brokaw, that was moderating recently, said that people had to be very careful about criticizing the non-elected Bush administration. Which,
yeah, didn't he?
Beat me off totally.
Yeah.
But the emphasis on Obama's terrorist associates that Palin has been unleashed to do reminds me about McCain's PNAC advisors.
Yeah.
William Kristol.
Oh, yeah.
PNAC co-founder Robert Kagan,
yeah.
PNAC co-founder Randy Schoeneman,
yeah.
Signatory and paid agent of a foreign country,
yeah.
James Woolsey, Barking John Bolton, Robert Zolick, Gary Schmidt, Richard Armitage, Max Boot, Michael Goldfarb. He was actually a research associate, I think. Let's see.
Now you're not calling these people terrorists.
I would. They've caused 4,179 American deaths so far.
Terrorism. Yeah. But you see, when Barack Obama was 8 years old, Ayers was Ayers was wandering around talking about how he's going to blow up the Pentagon. Oh yeah, big chance that was going to happen. And then 40 years later, they get together they both sit on the board of something after Ayers has been totally rehabilitated, quote unquote. But no, that's terrorism. You know, this Sarah Palin, I'm getting sick of her. I am almost to the point where I'm afraid I'm going to start saying nasty things about her.
Oh, I already do. And her wide-legged daughter. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that's off limits, but she's one for abstinence-only education, and it certainly didn't work in her family.
Didn't take, did it? I don't know. Something bad happened there, Mary. All right, Mary, let me move on. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. Take care.
Take care.
Yeah, I guess what is really irritating me the most right now about this this campaign, this presidential campaign, is the knowledge in the back of my head that it may all be for naught. You know, the Cheney crime family, the Bush crime family, may still pull off a November surprise, October surprise, December surprise. They may start. They may do something. All these presidential directives are just laying there, waiting to be activated. NORTHCOM, the Northern Command, that now includes the United States, you know, just on and on. We talked about this a week or so ago. And I just, you know, I do think about that. I realize you have to kind of put on your tinfoil hat to do that. But on the other hand, why would these directives have been written and signed into effectiveness unless there was some plan to use them? Of course, they made the argument about nuclear weapons during the Cold War, too. Why stockpile 9,000 nuclear bombs if you're not going to use them? And other than wiping out 500,000 Japanese in 1945, we never did use them, did we? But the whole thing is just too much for your humble and obedient servant here to deal with. Again, I just wish Barack Obama would stop dancing around the issue and just walk up to McCain, get in his face. He doesn't have to hit him with a barrel stave, although that would be cool. But just get in McCain's face and say, you know, why don't you shut your mouth if you can't tell the truth? Because that's what they've decided to do, lie. I left the Hampton to stay at the good old boy in Tennessee. Now he's sitting on the sofa, he's looking for his supper, wondering what's become of me. I got a 008 Tina Martin guitar in the back seat of the car.
Got the Flying Monkey Right Blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy. All this fussing and fighting,
man, you know I sure can't stay. It is 21 past the hour. A couple emails here. This is from BV. Mike just decided to switch over and listen to you. Tom Brokaw is on my last nerve. He's about as grouchy and cranky as that other crypt keeper on the stage. John McCain is such a liar. I'm a public school teacher at an upper middle class school. Corporation. The cost of a 2008 family plan for insurance is $17,592. Employee responsibility $7,640. Okay, so the worker has to pay $7,600, and if you lose your job and go on COBRA, you're going to be paying three times that. BV says, yeah, I don't think a crappy $5,000 tax credit is going to cover it. McCranky, keep up the good work. Oh, Brooke in Indiana. All right, thanks, thanks, Brooke. This is from A.E. Mike, I noticed the difference between Cindy and Michelle. After the debate, Cindy walked around for a minute in back of her husband with her hands behind her, never shaking anyone's hand. Then both she and Panama Jack made a quick exit. Michelle spent several minutes on her own, shaking hands, talking and smiling with as many people as she could, even going up into the audience to reach more people. She was only near her husband when they crossed paths as they worked the room in a friendly and open manner. Remember, I'm making this objective observation as a person who won't vote for either candidate. Yeah, well, Cindy McCain is, she's probably still stoned. She, you know, she's half reptile. If she gets too close to people, she knows her tongue will flick out and she'll try to wrap around them and crush them to death and swallow them. George writes, Mike, I think both of us and most of your listeners know that if Obama was 100% white, he'd have a 30-point lead. Hopefully he can win in spite of the racism. It's pretty obvious that Obama's intelligence exceeds McCain's by a factor of four or more, and Palin doesn't even qualify in the mix. I'm cautiously optimistic Obama's going to win it, and maybe there might even be some accountability down the road if the Bushes don't run for Paraguay. The so-called debate wasn't much of one, but it's obvious that we're in real trouble if McSame could somehow win. I also notice that Brokaw doesn't have anything left but his ego. Pathetic. Signed, George. All right, back to your phone calls here. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, listening on KPHX. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I had a dream the other night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was the debate was monitored by Marty Chong.
By who?
Marty Chong. Remember the other half of Cheech and Chong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been fun.
And he goes, oh, my God, God darn pillar guy. And then, who's the old guy?
You're right.
Would be the first thing out of his mouth. Who's the old guy?
Who's the old guy? Yeah.
Yeah, who's the old guy? You know, it's like, oh, my God, it was a nightmare. I spent some time in Alaska, about 12 years of my life.
Yeah.
And the Sarah Palin thing, her church, the Moral Majority is what they used to call themselves back in the 80s, turned our bar hours from 6 a.m. to 1 a.m.
Yeah.
They made it so we couldn't have snow machines on the streets. They came from California and took the state hostage, more or less, because a lot of people there just don't want to be left alone. They don't want to vote. I mean, we had a thing when I was on with Shannon Moore from the liberal talk show about how they shot the power out when they're trying to move the Capitol to Willow, which is just north of Wasilla.
Yeah.
One bullet didn't allow us to vote. And then there's all the jobs down in Kenai Peninsula. I mean, the Obama crew needs to go down to Kenai and meet with some of those people that don't have jobs anymore and go, how do you feel about Sarah Palin?
Yeah.
I mean, and her cast and crew of, you know, McCain, I mean, come on. You know, something happens to him, it's like having the cast of Earl running the country.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I think it's probably correct to say when something happens to McCain. If he were to get elected, he's, you know, 4 years, he'll be 72 when he takes office. I don't really consider 72 to be old. I don't think a person starts being old until they hit 80. Then you enter your old age. Anybody under 80 is not old, you know, up to 80. Yeah, that's my take. Maybe it's because of my age. But what I'm worried about is his health. I mean, worried about his dying in office and Sarah Palin stepping in as president. I can't imagine that. I mean, that's like something out of a Rod Serling television show. It's just beyond belief. Yeah, it's beyond belief.
One other thing, Mike, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I happen to be at a gas station where I saw one of my clients who is a decorated vet and hero.
Uh-huh.
He was getting out of his car. He went inside. I offered to help him to carry his case of water. He says, no, Alex, that's fine. Thank you for offering, though. He said, and I said, what do you think? He said, are you listening to the debate? I said, yeah, I'm listening to the debate. Mm. And he goes, you know, I lost my ability to walk in Vietnam. Besides us, some of my other brothers that were held in bamboo cages, and, you know, he got a cot.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody calls him the Songbird and a few other nicknames, which I can't say on the radio.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm.
And these fellow veterans, he goes, we are so appalled that this man could even want to say that he's a hero or act like a hero, or should he downplay, which is what they're probably going to do this go-around.
Well,
he said to me, he goes, this is rotten. I mean, this guy's not a hero. He goes, I know what I am, but I don't have to say it.
Yeah, I hear you, Alex. Somebody who bombs civilians from 30,000 feet and leaves body parts scattered all over Haiphong or Hanoi is not a hero. He's a mass killer. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. If the Obama-William Ayers connection is so horrifying and such a threat to America. And as the bitch from Alaska says, oh, well, you know, he has a different value of America than real Americans do. You should talk, lady, with you and your husband and this crazy son of a bitch that tried to... Well, we'll get to that tomorrow night. But if it's such a big deal, why didn't McCain bring it up tonight? You see, it's not a big deal. And especially not in front of a small audience who might, you know, if McCain would have brought up that garbage, somebody might have said, John, yo, stop. Stop. Stop with the talk about heirs, all right? Just stop. Oh, it's a big deal, though, isn't it, huh? Yeah, sure. Charlene is calling from Gilbert, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Charlene.
Hey, Mike. One of your emailers stole my thunder. I noticed how quickly Cindy and John scurried off of the stage. I was really surprised.
Huh.
But the other humorous thing I'll say is McCain's suit looked like it came out of one of those bins where you put your clothing for donations.
Oh, God, really?
Oh, God, it was awful.
Well, you can't say that about Obama. He looked like he just stepped out of GQ or something.
Oh, he always looks good.
You know? Yeah,
he always looks presidential. That you really have to give him credit for.
Right.
All right, I'll let you go and get to your other callers.
All right, thanks, all right. Charlene. You have a nice evening. Bye-bye. Ron in Briarwood writes, Mike, after the debate, Obama stayed on the stage talking to the people, answering questions, and laughing with everybody. The C-SPAN camera stayed on him the whole time. No sign of McLumpy. The idea of Brock being elitist just won't sell. The Obamas are as genuine as can possibly be, and the people can see it. Ron in Briarwood, New York. Yeah, see, the networks wouldn't leave the camera on because the networks got to get to the important business, and that's them talking to each other about what really happened, in case you and I couldn't, you know, figure it out. And Bob wants to know why Obama is babbling about Russian aggression again. Even Colin Powell says, well, on CNN Sunday, I guess this was like a week ago, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, this is from Crooks and Liars, offered some straight talk on the Georgia-Russia conflict. And not so subtly insinuated that McCain's rather belligerent response was careless and unnecessarily provocative. Powell said, quote, and I think it was foolhardy on the part of President Saakashvili and the Georgian government to kick over this can to light a match in a room full of gas fumes. Frank says no. So you're saying the Georgians provoked this? Powell, they did. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to have provocations in this area, but the match that started the conflagration was from the Georgian side. Christiane Amanpour, and yet, Powell, and that's a given. So, you know, what is Barack Obama have the impression, and I'm not challenging him on this because he's probably right if he does have this impression, that we Americans are so stupid that we can't understand, we can't see past the propaganda, and understand that no matter what you think of Putin, no matter what you think of the Russian military, this freakish Saakashvili, who was promoted by all the PNAC crowd to start this fight and then had his ass handed to him, because once again, the American conservatives, the American Republicans, George Bush, you know, they don't come to the rescue of somebody after they say, go kick that big monster's ass and we'll be right behind you. Oh, no, we won't. No, we won't. Uh-uh. We will pick on almost broken nation states like Iraq. We will threaten states like Iran. We will invade tribal areas like Afghanistan. We will cross the border into Pakistan, a country that is on the verge of just ceasing to exist. We will shore up narco states like Colombia. I mean, but if it comes to Russia, what? The U.S. is going to do what? They're going to tell Saakashvili, well, go ahead. Go into Ossetia. Go ahead. So it's just... it's disgusting that Barack Obama, to me it's disgusting, is it to you, that Barack Obama doesn't just say, John, you're crazier than an outhouse rat. You really are. You're just out of your mind. And you too, Brokaw, and everybody in this country who's been saying that Russia provoked this incident. Russia did not invade anybody. It was Georgia that invaded a breakaway province.
Yeah, but it lies within the borders of Georgia, Mike.
Those areas, Abkhazan, is that the, what was the other one, Kathy? The two breakaway provinces, they have been in dispute for, what, about 700 years. Most of the people who live in Ossetia are Russian speakers, culturally Russians. And to provoke the Russian military with that kind of a half-witted move, like I said, it's like the Mexican army deciding they're going to invade Southern California because it's a breakaway province, isn't it? Texas, isn't Texas a breakaway province? Wasn't there a war 1840? What, 3, 4 somewhere back in there? You know, Davy Crockett and Sam Houston and the Alamo and yada yada yada, right? Isn't Texas a breakaway province? Okay, it's a breakaway province. So, from Mexico. So why doesn't the Mexican army, like the Georgian army, invade? You know as well as I do. Because Mexico City would be immediately nuked. Jack is calling from Salt Lake City, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jack.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I was listening to the debate on Sirius Radio tonight, and I've been skeptically listening to the whole debates that have been going on, and I think Obama, this was a game changer. I think Obama completely nailed it. He finally answered McCain.
Yeah, I don't mean to imply that Obama was inarticulate or didn't have answers. I was not satisfied with a lot of his answers, but I'm a real liberal. I'm a real Democrat. And whatever Barack Obama is, he's not a liberal and he's not a Democrat. Well, he may be a Democrat, but he's not a liberal. So I agree with what you're saying, that Obama had total command of the entire debate. There's no question about that. I just wish that he was the liberal that the McCain army claims he really is, and he just simply isn't. But
yeah, I think he finally was able to answer back McCain. The last couple of debates, he's kind of just let McCain. He's agreed with McCain more than he's agreed with his own principles.
Yeah.
And but I definitely drank the Kool-Aid tonight. I think Tom Brokaw did a better job than any of these other mediators so far, even though he sounded like Forrest Gump. You know, he's like Lieutenant Dan. You know, he sounded just like Forrest Gump. And if you listen to the very end, somebody blocked his script, and he's like, I can't read the script. I don't know what to do next. So I think he definitely was moderated by, like, Forrest Gump. You know, and we had Lieutenant Dan up there in the States, just Mr. War Hero, playing the war card, you know.
Yeah, I hear you, Jack. Thanks. I don't. You may be right that Brokaw. Well, no, I don't think so. I think Jim Lehrer did a better job than Brokaw. Brokaw, to me, was just sitting there whining about. Now you guys agreed. Now this is your schedule. You know, screw that. What? 2 minutes to do what, and then 60 seconds to do what? Just so it fits into the TV format or something, the debate commission. I don't know who came up with it. I have no idea. But, you know, how many times did Brokaw say that? You know, Tom ought to just, I don't know, just, Tom, you had a great run. Just go back to whatever you were doing when they called you out to do this tonight, you know? David is calling from, Michigan, listening on Sirius. Hey, David.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Awesome. Every time that I see McCain, I think of Hank Hill's dad on King of the Hill on Fox. I hate to promote Fox, but every time that I see him, that's all I think about. But I McCain walking around, he, you know, acting like he's everybody's friend, and I just looks like a. He's put on a front to everybody.
Oh, he is. McCain is a phony bastard, complete phony. He doesn't give a tinker's damn about anybody other than himself and I guess his snaky-eyed wife.
But McCain is incapable, like most Republicans, of feeling anything remotely resembling compassion for anyone else's problems at all. He just can't do it. And you're right. When he tries to pretend like it, it just comes across as so incredibly fakey. Oh, my God.
I love you, Mike, and thanks for taking my phone call.
All right, David, thanks. Appreciate you checking in. John is calling from Arkansas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right, John. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I just had an observation while listening to the debate about Mr. McCain. He sounds so much like George Bush in his tones as he was speaking to the people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, well, is this McCain or is this George W.?
I hear you. I hear you.
You know, we've all heard George, how he lowers his voice and just starts talking, you know, like trying to persuade you and plead and everything else. That's just how he came off to me tonight.
Yeah, I hear you, John. I get the impression that that McCain is
desperate.
Desperate is the right word. He and he'll say anything, he'll do anything, but he's just a phony. Thanks, John. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll be right back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Nine before the hour. Well, it's certainly good to be back on the Malloy program. Tonight's program, of course, was pretty much cut up by the debate. Tomorrow night, if you will join me, we'll get to some of these serious topics. I don't think there's any doubt that Obama very politely and gently handed McCain's ass tonight. There's no question. I was looking across the web during the break. Just about every Insta poll, even the ones from Fox, have McCain losing big time. He and his hoe from Wasilla, Alaska, I think all except that 20% hardcore religious freakoid segment of the voting public, most everybody else has come to the realization that McCain and Palin are a real dog and pony show. There's nothing there. There really is nothing there except stupidity and ignorance and these attacks on Obama on the most asinine basis. I mean, it's not even creative. It's not even. The attacks on Obama, especially by the hoe, is just they're so ridiculous. They're not even entertaining. There's not enough substance that you can sit there and get your teeth into a little bit and go, oh, really? What's this about? You know, there's nothing. It's like a huge fart. You know, it gets everyone's attention, but it's nothing but air. There's nothing there. And McCain, you know, McCain ought to give up and just go check into a cancer clinic and get his face taken care of, and take that, what was it, how many pages were in his medical report? Seriously, John, your life is more important than this game you're playing. It really is. You ought to just chill. And as far as the hoe is concerned, go back to Wasilla. I mean, you got enough problems in your family. Ms. Palin, you really do. Just go home. Just give it up. You had your moment. Everybody knows your name. You made history. Your name will be in the history books now. But go home. Go home.
Your kind of semi porn queen thing is really wearing thin. You know, the put on the heels and take on the off the gloves. Jesus Christ! I mean, who wrote that for you, huh, Rove? Thanks to the crew tonight. The program is engineered by Ian Huff, who answered your calls. Also, Ben Burch, the podcast manager and technical advisor. Our non-technical staff is Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf. And the executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. And again, tomorrow night we will get back to a more familiar format of the Malloy program. Sam is calling from Portland, Oregon, listening on Sirius. Hey, Sam.
Hey.
Welcome to the program, Sam.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to bring up something about Obama and energy.
Okay.
During his speech, I believe he said he wanted to take America off all the coal plants and all that and focus on nuclear energy. But with that, he said we got to help China with that too. And we don't have to help China. We mainly have to focus on America. And I just wanted to see what your comments were on that.
Well, I think what he's saying is that there's no such thing, where it concerns global climate destruction, there's no such thing as China. There's no such thing as United States. There's no such thing as Venezuela or Great Britain or South Ossetia. It's Earth. And I think what Obama, I missed that. I must have taken a little potty break here during that part, but... If he said we've got to focus on China and India and the U.S., you're damn right. Of course we do. Because these divisions, these political divisions, you know, this is this country and that's that country and here's these boundaries, that doesn't mean a damn thing. It means nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. What matters is there are 6-7 billion of us who live on this planet. And we are, to varying degrees, destroying it. And when it's gone, then we all die. It's just so simple. It's just so simple. So it doesn't make any difference if the people polluting the air speak Chinese or English or Spanish or French. It doesn't make any difference. So Obama's absolutely right on that one. He's absolutely wrong about such a thing as clean coal. What the hell is that? What is clean coal? Is that like dehydrated water? What is that? Clean coal. Coal is pure carbon, isn't it? Or damn near. How do you clean it up? Come on, Brock. Come on, stop the crap. And as far as nuclear reactors, oh, yeah, okay. And what are we going to do in the first place? If we start building nuclear reactors, it's going to take billions upon billions. The country is pretty much bankrupt right now. The first reactor won't come online. How long does it take to build a nuclear reactor if you do it right? 10 years? 12 years? And then what? When it goes online, then what? What do you do with the plutonium? Come on, Obama. Stop it. Stop it.
Oh, okay, Mike.
I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.